Well, hello. Good afternoon, everybody. Hi, this is Eric Smith, and I am coming to you live on Blog Talk Radio. The show that I host here on Blog Talk Radio is called The Real Interfaith Dialogue, and I'm also broadcasting on Zoom, and I have a Zoom room open today. And today's topic, so I've been told, are biblical contradictions. Are there contradictions in the Bible? Unfortunately, I don't have anybody in the Zoom room. Nobody has bothered to come today. I posted this link, this Zoom chat, this Zoom meeting today in no less than, I would say, 25 different message groups on Facebook advertising it. I sent it to my friends list that's on Facebook advertising it. Nobody has bothered to come. I feel so alone today. So this may be a short show. I'm not sure. I'll start with a short introduction on what contradictions are in the Bible. Are there any contradictions? Can we perceive them in the Bible? Or can we prove that they are in the Bible? And if there are contradictions in the Bible, what does that mean to the Christian faith? So I'm going to tell a real quick story. I'm hoping somebody will be coming into the room soon, because I gave a message on this at my church probably about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, because a lot of people were asking me about contradictions within the Bible. The Bible contradicts this as far as the narrative is concerned for the resurrection of Jesus. You know, how many angels were there, or you know, who saw Jesus resurrected first? And one of the things that I always point out is that they always get the main thing, which was Jesus was resurrected from the dead. So this is what I tried to focus on when I did this little experiment for the message that I gave. What I did was I went back and I talked to a couple of my family members. And yes, I still talk to my family members. And I asked them a number of questions about my wife and I's wedding. Now, I've been married now for, it'll be quite a while, 34 years this year. It'll be 34 years here in a couple weeks. My wife and I have been married. And so I asked this question probably 2-3 years ago, I guess it was. And I asked them a couple questions about the wedding itself. I asked them who was in the wedding, what day of the week it was, where was it located, and they all seemed to get the location of the wedding correct. They all seemed to get the day of the week correct, what the event was, who was getting married. My wife and I were getting married. They get that correct. But a lot of the details, they just couldn't seem to keep straight. For an example, I asked who was my best man in the wedding. And many of them couldn't name any of the people that I had in my wedding. They pretty much understood who the ladies were, because it was my sister and my two sisters-in-laws were that. But the other three gentlemen, they weren't my brother or sister or anything like that. So they couldn't quite remember that. Then I asked them about, okay, what was the name of the pastor? None of them could get that. Nobody could remember the pastor's name. What about the songs that were sung? Because my father-in-law and my brother-in-law sang songs in the service, so nobody could name the songs that they sung. My father-in-law couldn't even remember singing in the wedding. And then there was a couple other things. You know, where was the reception held? Who was the band playing at the reception? You know, did anybody, you know, they couldn't remember a lot of the details, or at least some of the details were really, really fuzzy. But the thing that they did get straight, that they did remember who got married. They remembered where the marriage ceremony, the wedding was, and they remembered where the reception was. But the details, the people, the order of events, not so much. And that's what happens after decades of not going back to that date specifically. were not remembering exactly, you know, who was in the wedding or anything like that. And then it deals specifically with, okay, who was the first one at the tomb? How many angels were at the tomb? So here's where you have memories starting to slip. After, let's say, after 10 years after the event, let's say Mark was indeed written in 45 AD, like most scholarships pushing it to today. That would still mean that you would have people that still could not remember all of the details or the specific orders in which the details happened. And this is exactly what you find in eyewitness testimony. And I've tried to explain this to several people before, saying, okay, eyewitness testimony, if you're a police officer and you're investigating a crime and you have two witnesses come up and give you the same exact testimony, well, then what you know you have is you have collusion. You don't have eyewitness testimony. You have these two guys, they've gotten together, and they have decided that they are going to collude on the details. They are going to say, okay, this is what we saw. This is what they were wearing. This is exactly what they did. And so those details would line up. But when you start talking about multiple sources, multiple eyewitness accounts, then what you have is you have true eyewitness testimony. And there are going to be differences in the accounts. Why? Because no eyewitness account is ever going to be the same. People are different and they perceive things differently. So when these things are going to be recorded, they are going to be written down differently. So this is what you find. I see Borp decided to jump in today. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming in. As I said, I happen to think Islam is an anti-white religion. The joke is that it's such a That is such your sense of humor, sir, and I appreciate it so very much. Okay, so what's the point I'm trying to make here? The point that I'm trying to make here and I'm trying to drive at here is that, yes, there are discrepancies, variants in the eyewitness accounts from the New Testament, but this is exactly what you would expect to find in eyewitness accounts. One other thing that I want to point out before we start getting into the meat of the matter is the Bible itself. The Bible itself is a book that contains, and Bible means book, by the way. And this is one of the common objections that we get. If they weren't serious when they asked it, it would be a joke. But one of the things that this charge against the Bible, it says, well, the Bible doesn't even say it's the Bible inside the Bible. Does that even make sense? I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just sitting in here in an echo chamber wondering what the heck these people are thinking about. But the Bible is a book that was written over a 1,400-year period, beginning with Moses. Now, you may be able to make an argument that it was compiled earlier than that. And the reason for that is if you go to Genesis chapter 5, verse 1, says these are the books of Adam, are these the generations of Teledah, these are the generations of Adam, or this is the book of Adam. I'd have to put it, let me pull it up here real quick, make sure I don't misquote the Bible, but it says in Genesis, the very first book of the Bible, that this is the written account of Adam's family line. Now, this could also read, let me go ahead and bring up, that's the NIV, let me bring up the NASB, that's usually a NASB, there we go. All right, search that. Okay, so this is the book of the generations of Adam, the day when God created man, he made him in his likeness. Okay, so this is the book. So if you were saying this is the book, well, that means that it is a book. So you can even make the argument that the first 11 chapters of Genesis were written prior to Moses. And you can make an argument actually that Abraham wrote part of Genesis also. But Moses is given the credit. All right, so I'm getting off topic here, but let me circle back the wagons here. The Bible's written over 1,400-year before you need to stop, dude. That blows me away. Stop. Okay, you're getting me sidetracked. The Bible's written over a 1,400-year period, has 66 books in it, written by over 40 different authors on three separate continents and in three separate languages. And people are going to complain, it has contradictions in it. Okay, so what is a contradiction? What would be a contradiction? A contradiction, if you follow the rules of logic, let me just bring this up, rules of logic, contradiction definition. It basically says A cannot be non-A in the same at the same time in the same relationship. In classical logic, a contradiction consists of a logical incompatibility between two or more propositions, illustrating a general tendency in applied logic. One cannot say something that it is and that it is not in the same respect and at the same time. Okay, so A cannot be non-A at the same time in the same relationship. And do we find this in the Bible? And I would say no. Not when correctly understood in the context of when it was written and what it was written about. And I would also put in there a qualifier in the autographs. And what I mean by that, and the reason why I include in the autographs, is because the autographs would be the original books. And we don't have any of the original books of the Bible. We do not have the original writings of Moses, of course. We don't have any of the prophets from the Old Testament, any of the original books there. I mean, the earliest ones that we have are from Qumran, and that's, first century B.C. And we do not have any of the original books of the New Testament either. We have copies of copies of copies that have generally well preserved over the centuries of their composition, of their copying. We do know through comparative analysis when we compare the manuscripts that there are differences, that there are variants, that there are variations. But we don't have contradictions. We have variants in the New Testament. As a matter of fact, variants in the New Testament, some of the statistics on that is that we have over 5,861, I think, if this is a number of New Testament manuscripts that we have, which is equal to 2.5 million pages of manuscript evidence. And in the New Testament, there's 138,162 words, and there are about 450,000 variants of those 138,000 words in the 2.5 million pages of manuscript, if that makes any sense at all. In other words, there are variants in between the different manuscripts that we have, but the majority of those variants are word order, spelling, and some of the variants are, you can't even understand them unless you understand Greek, for crying out loud. So when we look at the variants in the New Testament, 99.7% of them are just simply that. They have no impact on the text. They have no impact on the meaning of the text. And they most certainly don't have any impact on church doctrine. None of them do. And of the 0.7% that are left there that are meaningful, they don't have any direct impact on church doctrine. For an example, in the book of John, chapter 7 and chapter 8, you have the woman caught in adultery. And I've mentioned this several times on my show before. You have the woman caught in adultery. This story is not in the earliest manuscripts that we have of the Gospel of John. As a matter of fact, in one of the manuscripts, we find it in the Gospel of Luke, of all places. So here you have a huge variant. You have an insertion into the Bible of one of the most beloved stories that you could about imagine. I just had somebody come into the room and then they left. It didn't seem like they wanted to stay. That's kind of depressing. John, okay, the book of John. You have one of the most loved stories of the Bible. It's not supposed to be in the Gospel of John. It's not even supposed to be in the Bible, for Pete's sake. Well, if you look at the writings of Papias, who was a direct disciple of John, he mentions the story himself. And so this is why it found its way into the book of John, because Papias says John wrote that Jesus said this. Well, this was a story looking for a place to be placed into the New Testament, into the gospel accounts. And this is how it worked its way into the Bible. But see, here's the thing. We know this because we as Christians are allowed to question the Bible. We are allowed to examine the evidence and follow the evidence to where it leads us. And if it leads us to a clear contradiction, if it leads us to a clear corruption of the gospel, we can at least identify that and speak about it openly. Whereas if you go to Islamic law, and if you dare to question any verse of the Quran, well, they can take you out and kill you for apostasy, because you're not allowed to question the Quran. You're not allowed to question what's in the Quran. You're not allowed to question the differences that we, and this is the topic of the show last week, oh, by the way, are there differences in the Quran? Are there different Quran? Or has, no, that wasn't the topic. Has the Quran been perfectly preserved? And the short answer to that, of course, is yes, is no. It has not been perfectly preserved, and we proved it last week without a shadow of a doubt. So this week we're going to look at perceived contradictions in the Bible. Now, I have a list here, and I'm not going to go through all of these, but this is a list. It's called 101 Cleared Up Contradictions in the Bible, and this is something that was put out by Dr. Jay Smith. He runs an apologetics ministry out of England called Slander. I'll mess it up if I don't look it up. But it is a ministry that he runs. And if you don't know who Jay Smith is, Jay Smith is like this lion that goes out and argues with people on Speaker's Corner in London. See, Jay Smith, apologetics. Apologetics. I should have had this up earlier. Okay. excuse me. Jay Smith, apologetics 315. This isn't it. It has a lot of stuff from Jay on here, but this doesn't seem to be it. I thought his ministry was called Flander something. Let me type that in here. P-F-L-A-N-D-E-R. Flander. Fander. Fander. Videos. Fander UK. Okay. Fander.UK is sitting on, right? This is it. Fander UK. And here, as a matter of fact, you can go to YouTube, and he has his own YouTube channel. And what he does is he essentially goes in here, and he handles all of these common objections Muslims throw at the Bible. And this list right here is just the beginning of them. If you go into atheist websites, they're gonna have all kinds of different objections that they're going to raise. You know, what hour did Jesus die? Did he die at noon, or did he die at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? And da 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 da. And they don't take into consideration the reckoning of time by the people who are writing it. You know, Luke was a Gentile versus Matthew, who was a Jew. You know, the Jews and Gentiles reckon time at different times, and so did Romans. So you're going to have differences there in the time, simply because, again, you're going to have eyewitness accounts identifying or describing the same event, but using different perspectives of the event itself. So that's why you have the contradictions. Now, or perceived contradictions. Let me restate that. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had a gentleman by the name of Magdi on this show, and he's an Islamic apologist. I'll give him this. He does a pretty good job of holding up his end of the argument. Of course, last week or the week before last, when he was on, I think Chris Wrightley started calling him out on some of the arguments that he was making, because the arguments that had been previously refuted. And Chris's point was to say, look, we've already refuted this argument. Why are you continuing to make the argument? And, you know, my feelings on that is, look, this is what this guy wants to say, then everybody's going to see that he's essentially repeating the same refuted argument. So, you know, let him use it in his time. That was my feeling on it. But Chris was holding his feet to the fire. But the reason why I bring this up is because one of the very first things he had said, one of his objections when he first came on our first show, was he went after the book of Genesis, and he went after the creation account as we find in chapter 1 and we find in chapter 2. And I've been doing this for, I don't know, 20 years now. Maybe not quite 20 years. It would have been 98. Well, I guess it has been. It has been 20 years now that I've been involved in some form of apologetics, Christian apologetics. And one of the first areas that I went into was over the issue of creation and evolution. I've mentioned this a couple times on my show that, you know, that's where I really started digging into the truth, because it had always bothered me. Did God create the heavens and the earth like he claims he did in the Bible, or are we all just just some microorganism that crawled out of the prebiotic muck, you know, a billion years ago, and poof, here we are. And this is something that I really had dug deep into. As a matter of fact, before I started my doctorate program, I had initially enrolled in a master's program that dealt specifically with creation apologetics, and then it kind of morphed into moving into my doctorate program. But anyway, the point is that this argument that Magni had made that very first show was something that I had heard a thousand times. And his argument was this: look, if you follow the order of creation in Genesis chapter 1, and then you compare that to the very next chapter, it contradicts each other. Because in one sense, you have, you have things being created out of order than what you have in chapter 1. And that's true. If you look at chapter 2, the order of creation is different. But does that mean it contradicts it? And somebody that would just be examining this on the surface would say, yeah, that looks like a contradiction, because in chapter 1 it's in this order, and in chapter 2 it's in this order. Well, this is where scholarship comes into play. This is where a correct and consistent exegesis of Scripture comes into play. Because right before the area that he started talking about, there is what they call this Hebraic literary device called a teledote. It's in Genesis chapter 2, verse 4. And it says, this is the account. Let me see what this note says. Okay, this is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day of the Lord, in the day that the Lord had made the heaven and earth. So here you have this teledote saying this is the generations of. This is a summation, basically, is what it's saying. This is a summary of what's coming up. And if you have this teledote that is before the summary, that doesn't mean that you are putting it in the same exact order as chapter 1. What you're doing is you're summarizing what God did in chapter 1. And there's information and details in chapter 2 that you don't find in chapter 1. So as you can see, by doing a correct exegesis of Scripture, that this is not a contradiction as Magni had insisted that it was. So when we start handling these common objections that Muslims like to make about the Bible, they're easily handled and refuted. And I'm going to point out a couple websites, and if we don't get somebody in here in the next 5 minutes, I'm just going to cut it short for the day, and we'll leave it at that. There's a couple websites out there for Christians that I would strongly encourage you to go to. The first one is called CARM.ARM, Christian Apologetics and Research Ministry.org. It's run by a guy by the name of Matt Slick. He is a prolific writer, and he has an excellent website here. If you go to the website, there are all kinds of resources here, videos, articles, and things that he does to, and he answers a lot of these. And one of them is Bible difficulties, and he gives a long laundry list of what we would call, he calls difficulties, but they're not really difficulties in essence. They're what other people would call contradictions, but scripture properly understood, properly read, properly applied is consistent. It all makes sense. It's broken down by books, Genesis to Deuteronomy, Joshua to Esther, Job to Solomon, Isaiah to Malachi, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans to Philemon, and Hebrews to Revelation. So he breaks it down to where you can understand it. And here's the one that I really like is Matthew. Why are there different genealogies in Matthew as compared to Luke? Because if you go to chapter 3 of Luke and compare that to chapter 1 of Matthew, they give genealogies for Jesus. You know, he is the son of so-and-so, he's the son of so-and-so, and they trace it all the way back to David. One of them goes all the way back to Noah. I can't remember which one it is, but let's say Luke's genealogy goes back to Adam and then goes to David. Matthew's genealogy starts at Abraham and goes to David. Okay, but when you look at these two genealogies right from the beginning of them, when it gets to Jesus, it says, who was Jesus' dad? And here's the problem. If you're going to ask who the father of Jesus is, Matthew says it was Joseph. And this is where we find, you know, Mary's husband, Joseph. Now, is that true? Was Joseph? If Jesus was, in fact, virgin born, is Joseph the father of Jesus? And then if you look at Luke's genealogies, you have a guy by the name of Heli as being listed as the father of Jesus. Well, there you have an apparent, what they Muslims like to grasp onto, contradiction. And it does sound contradictory, unless, like I've mentioned, that if you examine the text in its context and the Bible and its application. And here's what I mean by that. Matthew was a tax collector. Matthew was a Jew. Excuse me. And in order to be a tax collector, you had to be you had to have a sound education. And they think a lot of these tax collectors had been previously been scribes or been trained as scribes. So he would be have been very well grounded in Jewish law. And when he writes the book of Matthew, Matthew is written. As a matter of fact, a lot of people think the original text of Matthew was written in Hebrew, and I'm not going to go into the details of why they think that, but they think that it was originally written in Hebrew, and he writes to the Hebrew people, the Jewish people. That's who the text is for. That's who the gospel is for. So when he starts making an application of who the father of Jesus is, he's doing it from a Jewish legal perspective. So legally, according to Jewish law, Joseph would have been the father of Jesus. Whereas if you jump over to Luke, Luke provides in his the generations of Jesus also. But when you look at the generations in Luke, it says that the father of Jesus is Heli. Now, who in the heck is Heli? Well, nobody knows for absolute certain. But this is the assumption that can be made and the inference and conclusion that can be drawn. Rightly so, because Luke, since Luke was a Gentile and writing from a perspective of a Gentile to another Gentile, if you remember Oh Dear Theophilus from chapter 1, here you have somebody else being listed as the father of Jesus. And as a Gentile, the person who had been listed as the father of Jesus would have been the father of Mary, his mother. And this is why they think Heli was listed as Jesus's father. So there, if you understand the context of the supposed objection or supposed contradiction. If you examine it correctly, there are no contradictions. All right, let me jump over here to this room. Okay. Oh, darn it. Would that come up, please? I'm trying to make a call here, and I'm not. Okay, if I'm over here in my Zoom room, nobody has shown up here either. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go ahead and call it a day, folks. If you don't have anybody here and you invite all these people and they don't come, well, maybe I picked the wrong topic this week. This was a topic that our friend Chris Claus had IM'd me and said that we should get all kinds of Muslims to come. I mean, because they always want to talk about all the contradictions that we find in the Bible. And I published it in over 20 different rooms, groups on Facebook, hoping to get somebody to come, and nobody came. So, Vorp, I appreciate you coming, and I appreciate your humor. And, oh, by the way, Vorp, I'm going to be out this week. Chris Claus is going to be guest hosting Radio Freak of Fear Stand. And as a matter of fact, I need to contact him to make sure that he comes to that one. So we're covered down on Tuesday. So I would say God bless, and we will see you next time.